Hello everyone, before we start the episode, I'd like to take a brief moment to read a promo for a new podcast from right here in my home country of Canada. What do you normally think of when you remember the 1990s? Grunge music? The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air? Friends? That weird phase Unsolved Mysteries went through when they presented stories about UFOs and dogs who cured cancer? What you might not remember is that smartphones did not exist, and a whopping 61 million people were using pagers back in 1994. Things moved fast in the 90s, really fast, and that's why the last 10 years of the 20th century were a time like no other. On the new Curious Cast podcast, History of the 90s, host Kathy Kenzora will be traveling back in time to explore the stories that defined a decade. From Columbine to Ruth Bader Ginsburg to 90210, Air Jordan and the Spice Girls, if it had happened in the 90s, you'll hear about it on this podcast. Starting on July 17th, a new episode of History of the 90s drops every other Wednesday. So be sure to subscribe to History of the 90s and listen for free on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Thank you, and enjoy the show. July 10th, 1958. Monterey County, California. 26-year-old First Lieutenant Paul Wipke leaves Fort Ord, the Army base where he is stationed, but fails to return, and is declared a deserter 30 days later. 5 weeks after he went missing, Wipke's abandoned car is discovered nearly 500 miles away, in a remote section of Death Valley. Since Wipke's body cannot be found, the Army believes he suffered a mental breakdown and wandered into the desert and died. However, Wipke's family discovers troubling discrepancies to make them believe the Army staged his disappearance, possibly because he was recruited for a secret mission. In 1982, the Army officially changes Wipke's status from deserter to died in the line of duty, but he is never found, and the full truth about what actually happened to him remains unknown. After that, the trail went cold. Hello everyone, and welcome to the latest episode of The Trail Went Cold. I'm your host Robin Warder, and we've got a very strange military mystery to cover today. The 1958 disappearance of Paul Wipke. This case was once featured on Unsolved Mysteries, and I recently realized that aside from the murder of David Cox, I haven't done any episodes about the military-themed cases from the show. Unsolved Mysteries covered their fair share of stories about servicemen who died or went missing under seemingly suspicious circumstances, and the victims' families were certain that the military was involved and orchestrated some sort of a cover-up. Well, quite frankly, I feel that some of these segments had an overly conspiratorial tone, and that Unsolved Mysteries had a tendency to exaggerate certain details to make the cases seem more mysterious than they really were. However, the disappearance of Paul Wipke, a first lieutenant serving the United States Army, is a pretty bizarre story, and I think there are enough odd details to suggest that the military knew a lot more than they were letting on. At the time he vanished, Lieutenant Wipke was stationed at Fort Ord in California before he left the base one day and went absent without leave. When Wipke's abandoned car was discovered in Death Valley over a month later, the Army believed that he simply wandered out into the desert and died, but there is compelling evidence to suggest that someone else may have planted the car there. Wipke's family has always clung to two potential theories. The Army either recruited Wipke for a top-secret mission, or they staged his disappearance to cover up their culpability in assigning him to Operation Plumbob, a series of atomic tests which may have caused a severe negative impact on Wipke's physical and mental health. So we're going to explore all the different possibilities on today's episode. However, before we get started, just a quick reminder that The Trail Went Cold is a weekly podcast, which is currently available for download on several platforms, including iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play Music, and Spotify. So if you like this podcast, be sure to subscribe to it, and please leave us a rating or review on any of those sites to help spread the word. The Trail Went Cold is on Patreon, so if you would like to learn how to support the show, please visit our page at patreon.com/thetrailwentcold. For as little as $1 a month, you can garner access to exclusive rewards, which may include stickers and thank you cards, early access to episodes, and bonus content. So with all that out of the way, let us now explore the bizarre disappearance of Lieutenant Paul Wipke. Our story begins in California in 1958. Our central figure is 26-year-old Paul Wipke, who originally hails from Murraysville, Pennsylvania. Wipke went on to earn a civil engineering degree at Pennsylvania State University and was an honors graduate in the Reserve Officers Training Corps, where he received his Army commission as an officer. After completing basic training in 1954, Wipke began aviation school and eventually earned his Army pilot's wings. In July of 1956, he would be posted at Fort Ord, located in California's Monterey County, and achieve the rank of first lieutenant. After nearly 2 years, he was assigned the duties of company commander. On the afternoon of July 10th, Wipke left Fort Ord in his 1956 red and white Chevrolet. He told his friends that he was planning to go get a drink in the town of Monterey, which was located less than a mile away from the base. However, Wipke never returned to Fort Ord, and when he failed to surface by morning, he was declared absent without leave, aka AWOL. After 30 days passed, Wipke had still not turned up, so the Army officially declared him a deserter. But the case would take a bizarre turn only 1 week later. On August the 17th, over a month after he originally went missing, Wipke's abandoned Chevrolet was discovered by a fish and game warden in a remote section of Death Valley. The desolate location was nearly 500 miles east from Fort Ord, 42 miles from the nearest town, and 15 miles from the main road. The keys were still in the ignition, and among the items found in the vehicle was a suitcase containing some of Wipke's personal belongings and his military dog tags. While there were no obvious signs of struggle or foul play, Wipke himself was nowhere to be found. Investigators attempted to track Wipke's movements after he left Fort Ord on July 10th. It turned out that later that same day, Wipke had driven over 300 miles to Mojave, as his signature was on the guest registry of a local establishment called White's Motel. A receipt was also found in Wipke's car, which showed that he purchased 14 gallons of gasoline in Mojave on July the 11th. The spot where the Chevrolet was abandoned was approximately 145 miles from this location. The Army concluded that Wipke likely suffered some sort of mental breakdown, possibly due to the added stress of becoming a company commander, and this prompted him to drive nearly 500 miles to an isolated area in Death Valley. He subsequently wandered out into the desert and succumbed to the extreme heat, which could reach temperatures of up to 120 degrees Fahrenheit in July. The Army believed that the shifting sands of the desert would make it nearly impossible to recover Wipke's body, but oddly, they never even made an attempt to search for his body until 9 months after his car was found. This was just one of the many reasons that Wipke's family became suspicious about the official cover story. Paul's older brother, Carl Wipke, a veteran who had served in the Army during World War II, uncovered a number of troubling discrepancies. Carl immediately became suspicious when he attempted to call his brother at Fort Ord on July 12th, 2 days after he originally went missing. Carl learned that a pair of soldiers had collected all of Paul's personal belongings from his barracks the previous day, right after he was declared AWOL. Even though Paul would not officially be declared a deserter for 30 more days, his belongings were subsequently packed into 11 wooden crates and sent to his family. According to Carl, this was against Army regulations, as a soldier's next of kin or legal representative are supposed to be notified before their belongings are packed up. When Paul's car was discovered 1 month later, Carl only learned about it by accident. He had made an unofficial call to an enlisted man at Fort Ord, who subsequently phoned him back a half hour later. The soldier told Carl that Paul's vehicle had been discovered in Death Valley, but asked Carl not to tell anyone where he heard this because it was classified information. There were more odd details about the circumstances of how Paul's car was found. 4 weeks after he originally went missing, a rancher reported seeing a red and white Chevrolet driving through Death Valley, about 12 miles away from the spot it was eventually discovered. However, he claimed that the driver was dressed in a military uniform, even though Paul had been dressed in civilian clothing when he left Fort Ord. In addition, a pile of cigarette butts were found outside the car in the desert, even though Paul did not smoke. Prior to his disappearance, Paul had stopped communicating with his family, and Carl would discover a potential reason for this by pure chance. When Carl received Paul's personal belongings from Fort Ord, they mistakenly included a list of Paul's assignments, which revealed that he had been signed to temporary duty at Camp Desert Rock in Nevada from July until October of 1957. This was a camp which held servicemen who participated in nuclear weapons testing, and this particular series of tests was known as Operation Plum Bob. During this time period, a total of 29 explosions, all of which but two were nuclear, wound up being set off. Paul's duties involved flying an observation plane and relaying radio messages to and from ground troops advancing on Ground Zero. His list of assignments showed that he had logged 13 hours of flying time and witnessed a total of 5 atomic tests, the largest of which was a 44 kiloton blast. Carl Wipke would later speak to his brother's commanding officer, Lieutenant Colonel Charles Lewis, who noticed a number of troubling changes with Paul following his assignment at Camp Desert Rock, which may have stemmed from his exposure to radioactive fallout. Upon returning to Fort Ord, Paul noticed that some unusual blotches started appearing on his skin, as well as black moles on his body and warts on his hands. He started suffering from constant colds and was losing weight, and things reached the point where Paul needed to have all of his teeth removed before he was fitted with dentures. Lieutenant Colonel Lewis also said that Wipke's personality changed as he became more nervous and withdrawn and had trouble delegating authority in his new role as company commander. Lewis was also troubled by the circumstances of Wipke's disappearance, but claimed that whenever he attempted to make further inquiries, he was always advised to drop the matter because the case was closed. Lewis had been stationed with Wipke at Camp Desert Rock in 1957, and recalled an incident where two men dressed in civilian clothing spoke to Wipke and another officer on the airfield. For security reasons, Lewis decided to approach the two men and asked to see their identification, and they produced ID cards, which showed they were Army intelligence agents. Lewis said that over the course of the next few weeks, he would frequently see these two men return to the airfield. They conversed with Wipke 2 or 3 times per week, and Wipke always appeared to be nervous and uptight afterward. Whenever Lewis asked Wipke if there was anything wrong, Wipke always assured him that everything was fine, but never discussed his conversations with the two men. Lewis would later express his belief that these men may have been affiliated with the CIA. During this time period, the CIA would often recruit servicemen to assist them on classified, top-secret assignments, and Lewis felt that Wipke's excellent service record would have made him a promising candidate. Lewis's story prompted Carl Wipke to remember a conversation he had with his brother in January of 1958, where Paul told Carl that he was going on an assignment in which he would, quote-unquote, make a name for himself. But before Paul could share any more details, he told Carl there were some officers near his desk, so he couldn't say anything else, and this was the only time Carl ever heard about this subject before Paul disappeared. This caused Carl to theorize that his brother might have been recruited into some sort of joint Army-CIA program. If so, it provided a possible explanation for Paul's decision to stop at White's Motel in Mojave. Edwards Air Force Base was located nearby, so perhaps Paul met up with his CIA contacts there, who subsequently flew him out of the country on some sort of secret mission. They also held on to Paul's Chevrolet while he was gone, until, for unknown reasons, they decided to abandon the car in Death Valley and fabricate a cover story about Paul wandering out into the desert. It also turned out there was a bizarre side story involving a 25-year-old first lieutenant from Fort Ord named Charles Guess. Like Wipke, Guess was also a pilot and one of Wipke's closest friends. They had both been stationed together at Camp Desert Rock, but while there, Lieutenant Colonel Lewis claimed he saw Guess get interviewed on at least one occasion by the same two men who frequently conversed with Wipke. On the morning of July 22, 1958, just 12 days after Wipke went missing, Guest took off from Bishop, California, in an L-19 reconnaissance plane in order to perform a topographic survey for the Army. He was supposed to land in Winnemucca, Nevada, but the plane never arrived, and an extensive search failed to turn up any trace of him. However, in September of 1959, a pair of deer hunters spotted wreckage from a crashed plane on the west slope of White Mountain in Inyo National Forest, located about 35 miles northeast of Bishop. Skeletal remains which were identified as belonging to Guess were found nearby. On the surface, this seemed like a tragic accident, but there was one problem. The plane's wreckage apparently had a different serial number than the plane Guess had originally taken off in. The fact that Guess and Wipke had both been involved in atomic testing at Camp Desert Rock and happened to go missing less than 2 weeks apart led to speculation there was a connection between the two cases. For the next two decades, Carl Wipke would fight diligently to uncover the truth about what happened to his brother. In June of 1977, Carl sent a Freedom of Information Act request to the FBI, asking them to turn over all information they had about Paul's disappearance. The following year, the FBI answered Carl and informed him that they had destroyed 14 boxes containing field files on the case 6 months after they received his request. In spite of this, Carl still managed to accumulate nearly 3,000 pages of government documents, affidavits, and transcripts related to his brother. He noticed some more odd discrepancies, such as when he received a list of all of Paul's assignments in the Army, which made no mention of his 3-month stint at Camp Desert Rock. Paul also uncovered one document, which stated that his brother had once used the alias Paul B. Whipper, though no additional explanation was provided. One of Carl's goals was to change Paul's official status with the Army so that he would no longer be classified as a deserter. He even received assistance from a few senators, including Senator Charles Percy of Illinois, whose name you might recognize from a previous Trail Went Cold episode about the unsolved murder of his daughter, Valerie Percy. Carl's persistence finally paid off in April of 1982, when he successfully lobbied the Army Board of Correction to Military Records to undertake a new review of his brother's case. The board held a 3-day hearing, and in the end, they concluded that there was no evidence to support Paul's status as a deserter. Their final report stated that his unauthorized absence was excused as unavoidable, and that his death was, quote, incurred in the line of duty, not due to his own misconduct. As a result, Paul's status was officially changed from deserter to died in the line of duty, and the Army Adjutant General's Office subsequently issued a certificate of honorable service in his name. However, even though the board concluded that Wipke likely died the day after he disappeared, they still never provided any official explanation about what actually happened to him. While their official report acknowledged that Wipke had been assigned to Camp Desert Rock in 1957, they denied that he had ever been involved in atomic testing, even though this duty had been specified on the list of assignments which had accidentally been shipped to Wipke's family with his personal belongings. Lieutenant Colonel Charles Lewis had testified on Wipke's behalf at the 3-day hearing, but claimed that he ran into some issues shortly thereafter, including an audit from the IRS. Lewis also received a phone call from a man identifying himself as an agent from the Department of Defense, who asked a number of questions about the Wipke case. But when Lewis contacted the DOD later on, they maintained that none of their agents had ever phoned him, so Lewis never found out who the caller really was. This story would be featured on an episode of Unsolved Mysteries in April of 1991, featuring interviews with Lewis and Carl Wipke. Carl hoped that someone who had been stationed with Paul at Fort Ord might remember something and come forward with new information. But this never took place, so after more than 60 years, Paul Wipke is still a missing person, and his disappearance continues to remain shrouded in mystery. So I guess you could say, the trail went cold. So like I mentioned in the intro, Unsolved Mysteries featured their fair share of segments about mysteries which took place in the military. They often had a major conspiracy theory vibe to them, and I believe that almost none of the featured cases wound up being solved. I'm not saying that the military doesn't cover stuff up. but I do believe in many of these cases, the allegations put forward by the victim's loved ones were overblown, and the real explanation for what happened to them was probably far less clandestine than they made it out to be. I think the closest comparison you could make to the Paul Wipke case was the Unsolved Mysteries segment about the disappearance of Army Private Justin Bergwinkel because he also happened to be stationed at Fort Ord. There's no way there's any connection between the two cases, since they took place 35 years apart, but there are some interesting parallels. Bergwinkel was transferred to Fort Lewis in Washington State, but wound up going AWOL and vanishing without a trace in June of 1993. Much like the Wipke case, Bergwinkel's abandoned car would be found, this time at a motel near Fort Ord, and in both cases, his keys and many of his personal possessions, including his military dog tags, were found inside. Bergwinkel's girlfriend would later recount an incident where he told her that dog tags were used to identify dead soldiers, so if she ever found his dog tags lying around somewhere, that meant he was dead. In the months prior to his disappearance, Bergwinkel had been exhibiting strange behavior and implying to his friends and family that he was recruited for some sort of secret mission. So when Bergwinkel went missing, this prompted his loved ones to push forward the theory that he was killed on this alleged secret mission and the military covered up his death and abandoned his car. While I won't delve too deeply into the Bergwinkel case here, since I might cover it on a future episode, but the alternate explanation is that he was suffering from delusions of grandeur, so all of Bergwinkel's talk about a quote-unquote secret mission was nothing more than a fantasy, and his disappearance was actually the result of a mental breakdown. Now, I'm sure you can see the numerous similarities with what happened to Paul Wipke. Months before he went missing, Wipke told his brother that he was going on an assignment where he would, quote-unquote, make a name for himself, and he was frequently seen having conversations with two men who may have been working for the CIA. So Wipke's loved ones theorized that he was recruited for some sort of top-secret mission and might have been killed in the line of duty, prompting the military to abandon his car in the desert and fabricate a cover story that he simply wandered off and died after some sort of mental breakdown. Like Bergwinkel, Wipke had been exhibiting strange behavior prior to his disappearance, though there is actually an explanation for this, since Wipke seemed to be suffering the effects of being exposed to radioactive fallout during atomic testing at Camp Desert Rock. But this begs the question, if Wipke was deteriorating both physically and mentally, why would the CIA have considered him to be an ideal candidate for an important mission? This suggests a potential alternate explanation, where Wipke's disappearance was orchestrated to cover up what happened to him during his work on Operation Plumbob. While there's no hard evidence that the military ever did anything shady in the Bergwinkel disappearance, I do think there are enough suspicious details in Wipke's disappearance to suggest that something was covered up. In Bergwinkel's case, we really only have his word that he was recruited for a mission, but here, we have multiple witnesses, including Wipke's commanding officer, Lieutenant Colonel Charles Lewis, who saw Wipke chatting with two men in civilian clothing on several occasions. Wipke apparently seemed nervous after he spoke to them, and never disclosed the nature of their conversations, and it sounds like their presence at Camp Desert Rock was a bit out of the ordinary. Lewis would also claim that whenever he tried to make inquiries into Wipke's disappearance, he was told to let it go because the case was closed. One of the reasons it's difficult to swallow the idea that Bergwinkel was recruited for a secret mission is because, well, he just didn't seem like a particularly remarkable candidate for something like that. At the time he went missing, Bergwinkel had been serving in the Army for 3 years at the rank of private and had just been assigned to kitchen duty. Wipke, on the other hand, was a skilled pilot with an excellent service record who had recently been promoted to company commander, so I could possibly see the CIA being interested in someone like that. But like I mentioned earlier, due to the effects of the radioactive fallout, Wipke was starting to undergo personality changes and suffering from numerous health problems, which included the removal of all of his teeth. So you'd think this might have given the government second thoughts about using Wipke on an important secret mission. That's why it's possible that Wipke's conversations with the two men may have actually been related to his involvement with atomic testing. They might have been monitoring Wipke to see how his exposure to radiation was affecting him. But before we delve any further into this, let's explore the circumstances of how he went missing. We know that Wipke was last seen leaving Fort Ord on July the 10th and told his friends that he was planning to drive to Monterey to get a drink. But for whatever reason, he drove over 300 miles to Mojave, and this part can be verified since his name was found in the guest registry of a local motel, and there was a receipt which showed that he filled up his car with gas the following morning. When Wipke failed to report back to Fort Ord, he was declared AWOL that same day. Now here's the main reason I believe that the Army was covering something up in this case. On the surface, the cover story they pushed forward does not seem that implausible. They believe that Wipke was feeling overburdened from the stress of being promoted to commanding officer and suffered some sort of mental breakdown, prompting him to drive to a remote spot in Death Valley, where he subsequently wandered out into the desert and perished. I know that Wipke's family and friends always maintained that he was an excellent soldier and never would have deserted his post, but the effects of the radioactive fallout were clearly causing him to deteriorate, so I can totally believe he had a mental breakdown. However, the major red flag is that Wipke's personal belongings were immediately cleared out of his barracks and boxed up on July 11th, the same day he was declared AWOL. The standard protocol in the military is that someone has to be AWOL for at least 30 days before they are officially classified as a deserter, which is exactly what happened here. This is when you'd expect them to go through the procedure of boxing up the missing soldier's belongings and shipping them to his family. There is no reason to do this when a soldier with an otherwise exemplary record is missing for only one day, particularly when Army regulations state that the soldier's next of kin or legal representative needs to be notified before they go through the process of clearing out their belongings, which did not happen here. So how could the Army have been so certain that Wipke wasn't coming back? At this point, there's no way they should have known that he was hundreds of miles away. The theory that Paul's brother, Carl Wipke, pushed forward is that Paul drove to Mojave and checked into White's motel in order to meet up with the people who recruited him for his secret mission. The Army then held on to Paul's car while he was flown to another section of the world for his mission, such as Asia. But something happened which ensured that Paul was never coming back, so the Army decided to abandon his car in an isolated section of Death Valley and fabricated a cover story about him wandering out into the desert. After all, Death Valley is one of the hottest places on Earth, in such a desolate location that it wouldn't be hard to imagine being unable to find Wipke's body there. One of the key points used to support this theory was the eyewitness sighting from the rancher, who claimed he saw Wipke's red and white Chevrolet being driven through Death Valley by a man in a military uniform. This sighting took place 4 weeks after Wipke originally went missing, so if he really did see Wipke's car, this raises a lot of questions. I know that Wipke was wearing civilian clothes when he left Fort Ord, but even if by chance Wipke was the driver seen wearing the military uniform, where was he during the previous 4 weeks he was missing? Of course, I'm sure there was a lot of red and white Chevrolets being driven around back in 1958, so I guess the alternate explanation is that the rancher did not actually see Wipke's car. But if the sighting is legitimate, I find the timing to be interesting, since the Chevrolet was seen around the approximate time period the 30-day window had passed, which allowed Wipke's status to be reclassified from AWOL to deserter. The presence of cigarette butts outside of the abandoned vehicle is also an intriguing clue. Unless Wipke just suddenly decided to take up smoking prior to his disappearance, this suggests that someone else was with the Chevrolet when it was abandoned. This is quite reminiscent of another famous missing persons case, the disappearance of Ray Grecar, where cigarette ashes were found inside his abandoned car, even though he detested smoking. So when Paul's case was finally heard by the Army Board of Correction to Military Records nearly 24 years later, it was pretty much a good news, bad news situation for his family. The good news is that he would no longer be classified as a deserter. The bad news is that he was reclassified as having died in the line of duty, but there was no additional explanation. I can certainly understand if the Army had to keep certain details classified, but the last time Wipke was seen alive, he was leaving Fort Ord in civilian clothes in order to supposedly get a drink. So whatever happened, it's unclear how this would qualify as died in the line of duty, especially when you consider that his body was never found, and there was no concrete evidence that he was actually dead. But this ruling could be interpreted in a number of different ways. If in fact, Wipke really did suffer some sort of mental breakdown, drove out into the desert, and wandered off, then this could have been the result of the after effects of radioactive fallout. Since Wipke was exposed to radiation because he was assigned to be an observation pilot at Operation Plum Bomb, and this assignment involved him being placed in harm's way, then I guess this could technically be classified as died in the line of duty. Here's some additional information about Operation Plum Bomb, which took place at Camp Desert Rock, and is considered to be one of the most controversial nuclear test series in the history of the United States. 27 of the 29 explosions they set off during this operation produced nuclear yield, and over 16,000 servicemen were involved in the exercises, as well as 1,200 test pigs who were subject to experimentation. Of course, at the time Wipke went missing, the details of Operation Plum Bomb were classified, and Wipke's family only found out about his involvement when an assignment sheet was mistakenly included with his personal belongings. But as the years went on, the operation became the subject of much criticism, since enormous amounts of radiation were released into the atmosphere during the testing, and it's estimated that around 3,000 servicemen were exposed to dangerously high levels. In fact, a survey was performed in 1980, which showed that there were elevated rates of leukemia among these servicemen. I mentioned earlier that one of the tests Wipke was involved with as an observation pilot produced a 44 kiloton blast. By comparison, the bombs dropped on Hiroshima and Nagasaki were only 15 and 20 kilotons, respectively. In 1990, Congress passed the Radiation Exposure Compensation Act, so a number of servicemen who suffered health consequences because of their work on Operation Plum Bomb were compensated by the government. When you look at the circumstances, it just seems far more plausible to me that Wipke's disappearance was somehow related to atomic testing rather than anything to do with a secret mission, but there are still a few things which don't make much sense. I suppose this would be a good time to discuss the potential mystery within a mystery involving the death of First Lieutenant Charles Guess. As you recall, Guess was one of Wipke's closest friends at Fort Ord, and a plane Guess was flying went missing only 12 days after Wipke disappeared, before the wreckage was discovered in Inyo National Forest over 1 year later. There isn't much information out there about Guess, and while we do know that he had been assigned to Camp Desert Rock alongside Wipke, it's unclear if he was also suffering any after effects of radioactive fallout. On the surface, it does seem like Guess's death was nothing more than a tragic accident, but it is eye-opening that this occurred so soon after Wipke went missing. The one detail which has made people believe there might be something more to Guess's story is that the serial number found on the wreckage was apparently different than the serial number for the plane he took off in. That is certainly weird, but is it possible that the discrepancy in the serial numbers might simply be the result of a clerical error? I mean, it would be one thing if you think that someone sabotaged Guess's plane and caused it to crash, but how do you fabricate a crash with a completely different plane with a different serial number? If the whole thing was staged, then what happened to the original plane Guess had been flying? Well, I can believe that the Army might have fabricated Wipke's disappearance by leaving his car in the middle of the desert. This just seems way too convoluted. So it's possible that the whole side story with Guess is nothing more than a red herring, and it's just a tragic coincidence that his death took place during the same month Wipke disappeared. Overall, the idea that Wipke was recruited for a secret government mission is pure speculation, aside from the conversation he had with his brother Carl, where he said he would be going on an assignment where he could, quote-unquote, make a name for himself. But this conversation took place in January of 1958, 6 months before he went missing. It is possible that Wipke really was in line to receive an assignment like that at some point, but because of his physical and mental deterioration from the radioactive fallout, he was ultimately pulled from this assignment, and it had no bearing on his disappearance. Even if he wasn't involved in some sort of mission, we do know for certain that Wipke still made a lengthy drive from Fort Ord to Mojave and checked into White's Motel. So is it possible that he could have been meeting someone there? Well, Wipke was seen having numerous conversations with two men at Camp Desert Rock who appeared to be government agents, and while he never revealed what they talked about, he usually seemed nervous after they spoke. One theory which has been pushed forward is that Wipke may have witnessed something he shouldn't have while he was assigned there, such as experiments involving radioactive testing on humans. But it's also possible that he was being extensively questioned about the effects he was suffering, and perhaps this is the reason he went AWOL and traveled to Mojave to meet someone. The fact that Wipke's belongings were removed from his barracks the day after he left Fort Ord indicates to me that someone in power knew he wasn't coming back there, at least not in the near future. Now, I'm not suggesting that Wipke met up with someone who murdered him to cover up the fact that he had been exposed to radioactive fallout. I think an alternate explanation is that he was taken somewhere to receive treatment, but ultimately succumbed to his illness. The Army may have been worried about a potential backlash once it got out that a number of servicemen were put in harm's way during their work on Operation Plumbob, so they got rid of Wipke's body, abandoned his car in Death Valley, and came up with a cover story which involved him being a deserter who had a mental breakdown and wandered off to his death in the desert heat. Technically, the reclassification that Wipke died in the line of duty may have been correct, but they could not reveal the exact circumstances of what happened. During his Unsolved Mysteries interview, Carl Wipke stated that if Paul had been killed in the line of duty on some sort of secret assignment while serving his country, their family could accept that. But there's a big difference between dying for your country and dying because your country gave you an assignment where you were irresponsibly exposed to lethal levels of radiation. Now, I'm not saying that I'm entirely convinced that the Army staged Paul's disappearance to cover up his involvement in Operation Plumbob. We now know that thousands of other servicemen were exposed to radioactive fallout during that operation, and many operations just like it during this time period. It's not like the government could cover up every single one of these incidents, so what exactly made Paul's case stand out? I really would be interested to know if many other servicemen were experiencing the same symptoms as Wipke during that time period. Did many of them get warts and black moles and need to have all their teeth removed? Or was this just a unique case? Now, the Unsolved Mysteries segment leaned more towards the angle that Wipke went missing on a secret government mission, and while they definitely acknowledged the issues with the atomic testing, they kind of downplayed the idea that it was the reason for his disappearance. The ironic thing is that the Radiation Exposure Compensation Act was officially signed into law on October the 15th, 1990, less than 6 months before the Unsolved Mysteries episode aired. If Wipke was still alive, he would have been eligible for at least $75,000 in compensation because of his participation in atmospheric nuclear weapons tests. It was no longer a big secret that many of the servicemen who worked on Operation Plumbob had their health needlessly endangered, so I'd like to think that if this was the real reason between Wipke's disappearance, the government could have had the decency to finally reveal the truth to his family. Whatever angle you lean towards, this is still a very bizarre story, and I believe it's one of the few Unsolved Mysteries military-themed stories in which they likely did take steps to cover up someone's death, though their actual motive for doing so is still unclear. After all this time, I don't think we'll ever know the full truth about what happened, but if by chance you happen to have any information about the unsolved disappearance of Lieutenant Paul Wipke, please contact the appropriate authorities. But if you just have your own thoughts about what happened, feel free to leave me a comment or send me an email to robin.warder@icloud.com. That's robin.warder@icloud.com. Another reminder that The Trail Went Cold is on Patreon, so please visit patreon.com/thetrailwentcold to learn how you can support our podcast and become eligible for some pretty neat rewards. Over the past year, we've already produced a bunch of exclusive bonus episodes for our patrons in tiers 2 and 3, and this month, we've released a new episode about the unsolved murder of David Buller, a Canadian cold case from Toronto, which I discussed during my live show at the True Crime Podcast Festival a few weeks ago. And for our patrons in Tier 3, I've also released another new audio commentary track, which can be played over a classic episode of Unsolved Mysteries. So to learn more information, feel free to visit our Patreon page. I'd also like to take a moment to give a shout out to our most recent listeners who have signed up with us on Patreon this week, and they are Josh L. and Alex F. Thank you so much for your support. And I also want to make an announcement. This coming Saturday, August the 3rd at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, I will be holding a live Watch Together event in which I will be streaming a marathon of original segments from the first season of Unsolved Mysteries. It will specifically be featuring the cold cases which have been covered on episodes of The Trail Went Cold, and you'll get to chat with myself and other listeners online while you watch these segments. It will be streamed on a web application called SciTube, and if you go to either our Facebook page or Twitter page, you will find a post pinned at the top of these pages containing a link. All you have to do is click on it in order to join us. Once again, our Unsolved Mysteries Marathon on SciTube begins this coming Saturday, August the 3rd at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and I hope to see you there. Of course, on August the 18th, just a few weeks from now, I will be participating in another true crime podcasting event at the Royal Cinema in Toronto, which will also include Christy from Canadian True Crime, Joran from the Nighttime Podcast, Nina from Already Gone, and Aaron from Generation Y. At the event, we will be doing a presentation about the Donnellys, an infamous Canadian true crime case from the 19th century, and the show will also include panel discussions, an interactive Q&A, and a meet and greet. Tickets are $25 each, and you can find the link to our website to purchase them in our episode description. And the weekend after that, I will also be doing another live show at the Ottawa Podcast Festival, being held in my hometown of Ottawa, Ontario, on Saturday, August the 24th. The festival is an all-day event featuring live shows from a whole bunch of different local podcasts, and The Trail Went Cold will do a one-hour show at 7:30 p.m. that evening. To learn more information or purchase tickets to the event, please visit their website at ottawapodcastfestival.com. I also just wanted to give another shout-out to my supporters at the Unsolved Mysteries message board at the Sitcoms Online forum and the Unresolved Mysteries subreddit. Need to provide a big thanks to McGill Foote, who edits and assembles this podcast together for me, and Vince Nitro, who composes the eerie music you hear on every episode. If you haven't already, you can like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, or leave us a rating or review on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play Music, or Spotify. So have yourself a good week, and join me next Wednesday for another new episode of The Trail Went Cold.